So here we are with yet another podcast, and this week our guest is a very special person. My old friend and colleague Jackie Fullerton once introduced her at a function I was at by saying, "Here is Dame Mary Peters," but actually she has since been elevated even further, and since that elevation she's been elevated again. He said, "I'm not sure how I should formally address her, so I think I'll just stick with Your Majesty."
That's what Malcolm would have said.
Yes.
But you know to call me Mary P.
Mary P. It's a, the late, great James Young used to say, they'd say, "Why do we not call you James?" And he would say, "Well, you're welcome to call me James. My friends call me Jimmy." But, you know, your friends or people who've known you a long time, it's always Mary P. You know, I even said to Hazel, "What are you doing today, dear?" I said, "I'm going to interview Mary P." "Oh, are you indeed?" she said. And of course, that was a life before you got a life, wasn't
absolutely
it?
Absolutely.
When you were teaching.
Yeah, we taught in the same school.
Yeah, that fascinated you, James, didn't it?
It really did, because Hazel always says to me, "Dear, it's always really nice when you see Sonny, the smile from Mary Peters, coming into the school." And I'm thinking, well, that's really lovely. I'm sure that was lovely too.
I know, it was lovely for me because she was an older, more mature teacher, and I was very young and innocent. And, you know, to be welcomed by the older generation was important.
Yeah, I tell you what absolutely flabbergasted me, and it takes a lot for my flabber to be gasted, I can tell you. In your latest book, right, which is an excellent, it's a page turner, it's one of those, I'm not available this evening, I've got a book to finish, and you want to just keep reading it, it's a real page turner, but I was astonished to read in the book that when you were working, teaching what used to be called domestic science, it's now home economics or something, but anyway, domestic science is grand. When you were teaching domestic science, you were a bona fide, fully qualified teacher, and you were getting £9 a week.
I know. After 3 years training, it wasn't fair.
No.
I cried when I got my first salary because I was so disappointed.
Was it monthly or weekly?
Monthly.
Going to say very weekly.
Oh, probably weekly, but yeah. We had to buy our outfit for going for our graduation out of that as well. Yeah. £2 a week I paid in digs.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, that wasn't bad. Did you get meals?
No, we got an evening meal.
All right. Mm-hmm. And I did a thing with Jackie Blanchflower, right? Lovely man he was, Jackie. And he said that he was one of the Busby babes. And he shared digs in Manchester with David Pegg and Eddie Coleman, himself, and Duncan Edwards. And he said, as a treat, their landlady, every Saturday after they'd played a game, they would go home to get their tea. And they would have their tea. And because it was a Saturday, because it was a match day, win, lose or draw, she would have a plate of what English people refer to as cakes. We call buns, but anyway, one of these was a chocolate eclair, and he said, each Saturday, Duncan Edwards reached over, lifted the chocolate eclair, and he went and said,
nobody else
he said, "By the way, that's mine." So this week, Blanche Flower says, Clayton lifts it. And he said, the room fell silent. And he goes, "Duncan, that's yours." So that's as Dig stories go. But £2 a week. Mm-hmm. And was this the Presbyterian family you lodged with for a while?
Well, one of them was.
Yes.
And I got really good meals there. In one house that I was in Diggs, I got two slices of Spam and two slices of tomatoes after a day at college. That was before I went teaching. That was difficult.
Well, at least you were making things at school.
That's that true. You
didn't dip in. But, so let's go way back. Let's go to Mary Peters is living in England with her family. It was in the sort of greater Liverpool area, wasn't it?
Was where they built a big Ford factory.
Right. Halewood.
Halewood.
Yeah. Here, Northern Ireland, is a small place, but so many sports people. You know, in terms of ratio to population, it's incredible.
We punch way above our weight. You know, we were judging the Sports Personality of the Year here yesterday.
Yeah.
And there were 15 names that we had to debate, and you could have chosen any one of them.
Yeah.
For star quality and performance.
The wee fella who is the gymnast,
right. Reese McLennan.
The very name I was grappling for. I mean, he is exceptional. Was he one of your trust people?
Yes. Oh, we've supported him since he was very young.
Yeah.
But he's double European and world champion, which is extraordinary.
You know how to pick a winner. Yeah. You know?
I know. But we also had Rory McIlroy on the list.
You did, and yes. Carl as well, didn't you?
Not this time.
Not this time, no.
Oh, yes, he was. He was on the list, yes. Yeah.
And he was one of your trust people, yes, too, yeah. Because I saw in an interview recently where he had referred to that.
He's always appreciative that we supported him. You see, boxers come from deprived areas very often, and they don't have the funding to be able to travel for competition, and
Well, it's one of my earliest memories, sporting memories, was when a fella across the street from us went to the Olympics in Rome, no, Tokyo, 1964.
A boxer?
Yes.
Okay.
Jim McCourt.
I know, I went to his funeral recently.
I know, yeah.
He was a lovely man.
Jim was a lovely, lovely guy. He was a joiner by trade, yeah. And he came to put a ceiling into our bathroom. Wooden, right? And he was flying through it, and he's halfway there, and he said to Suzanne, "I don't like that. I'm taking that off. I'm going to do it diagonally." And he did it diagonally, and Susanna had to go to Brussels on business. She said, "Jim, when I come back from Brussels, I don't want you to be here. I want this done. And don't change your mind, please." You know? But that was
a lovely man.
Oh, yeah, I remember that as a child on Good Morning Tokyo. The song.
I remember.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
It's the only catchy tune they've ever had for the Olympics. I can't remember any others, you know.
They put, when Jim came back, I lived on the Grosvenor Road, and when Jim came back, his mum and dad ran this shop called the West End Radio and Cycle Store. And they brought Jim down Leeson Street on the back of a flat-back lorry.
Because he'd won the bronze medal.
Bronze medal.
Yeah.
And they put on the front of the lorry this huge banner that said, "You're as good as gold dust, Jim."
That's nice.
And I always remember that. But, you know, we were, people here didn't care what sport it was. Was it athletics? Was it boxing? Weightlifting? You know, pole vaulting? Whatever. They wanted somebody to win.
Absolutely.
A gold medal. And somebody in this room wanted to win a gold medal. And that was so special. Malcolm said to me, he said, "From this day on, Mary will be forever known simply as the Golden Girl." You know?
He was a special man, wasn't he?
He was.
He was special to you, wasn't he, James?
He was very special. Not just, I remember this particular day, we had to play against the sponsors. I was playing for Distillery, the football team, and other well-known footballers. And Glenn Ferguson was the captain of the team and so on. And he was about to set the ball up, and Pat McShane was about to take it, and Glenn Ferguson says to him, "You're not taking that shot. Young James Martin is taking that shot." So I looked at the ball and looked at the keeper, and I did this trick of, when you hear a whistle going, you jump backwards, see the ball, and send the keeper the wrong way. So my shot was through the middle of the net, and I jumped, and then on Philip Simpson, the footballer, and for this one to just get away. And Maggie came up with this, came up with this nickname of me, the Latin Tree Cracker. I said, Latin Tree Cracker, keeping today. I'm thinking, that's really funny. Just to have. Was a nice man, right? You know, really.
He's a lovely. He was so good to the underdog.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was going to Munich, he said to me, "How well do you think you're going to do?" And I said, "I'm going to win the gold."
Mm-hmm.
He went.
But
he was so proud,
wasn't he? Well, he was. I mean, not just then, until the day he died.
He
was so proud.
I know.
You know,
yeah.
He just lit up, and he would tell me the story every so often. I had Mary in a telegraph, and I said, "What do you want to do here?" And she says, "I'd like a track." And I says, "Right, let's get going in this here, you know." And the whole Olympic thing, it was like you'd been working for this all your life, and suddenly you must have had an inner feeling, it's my time.
I think the thing was, I'd been so disappointed so many times, and disappointed my coach, who had devoted so much of his life to making me a champion, that I didn't want to let him down anymore.
Mm.
And I won 2 gold medals at the Commonwealth Games in Edinburgh in 1970, and you know, it was nice feeling.
Yeah.
Winning was good.
Yeah.
And I decided I wanted more, and that's really when it turned my idea of wanting to be a star and wanting to be a gold medalist for the first time, really.
And it absolutely was a life-changing moment, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I came home on a Friday, but I was back at work on Monday. But I was getting all the accolades, you know. I was the sportswoman of the year, and of course I won the sports personality. And it was just lovely to bring good news back to Northern Ireland when we'd had so many years of the troubles.
Now, this is not my first time at the rodeo. I have interviewed you down the years many times. But one of the things that always stuck with me was you said to me how difficult it was. Your event was split into 2 days, five different disciplines, three the first day and two, and you have that night to kill. And I think of the two disciplines that were left, one of them was not your favourite of the five. Is that fair?
That's fair, but Heidi Rosendahl, who was my nearest rival, the German girl, she was the world record holder in the long jump, and it was my weak event.
Yeah.
So I was way in the lead after the first three events, but then she was able to pull up the points to get closer to me. So it meant that in the last event,
The 200 metres, was it?
Had to run faster than I'd ever run before.
But were you not in a position there where people were saying to you, you need to do better than this time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't want to put any pressure on you, you know. And was that the way it was?
It was, absolutely. But I wanted it so much.
Yeah.
And I ran my heart out, you know.
Do you know what always strikes me as ironic? The fact that the high jump was not a favourite event of yours. Every picture you see of the year you won the gold, it's that picture.
I know, it was because Dick Fosbury had devised this new style of jumping at the 68 Olympics.
Right.
Then everybody started doing it. And my coach took me to Crystal Palace one day, and he said, just watch those guys doing it. And then he said, go and get changed and have a try. And I jumped higher than I'd ever jumped before. So I knew it was going to help me get more points.
Yeah.
And I nearly cleared 6 feet, 5 foot 11 and three quarters.
People always talk about fine margins in sport. I mean, it really was fine margins for you, wasn't it?
I won by a tenth of a second out of five events. You know, and Jim Neely asked Heidi when she was over celebrating last summer, have you forgiven Mary for beating you? And she said no. Which was lovely.
Yes. Well, the only thing I would say on that one is, had the shoe been on the other foot, you would have answered exactly the same, because that's what champions do.
That's right.
And that's why we have people who are wonderful sportsmen and women, and they're right up there. But then you have that other little group who are just above it, and it's that attitude that pushes them, isn't it?
That's right. You know. It's like James when he used to do tag rugby.
You used to, I'm still doing it.
I used to do
it. Yeah.
I met James one day and he had a big FC on his arm. And
right.
I said,
oh, I know.
What's that for? And he said, former captain.
No, but I was actually given this from a friend, and on it it said, former captain. And then I said, this is the former captain, and she didn't know what was the former captain was. So I had to explain to you, this band was called. So I was the captain in 2009, and for the time, and I actually remember your lines, the Mary Peters lines, and was in New Forge. And somebody says to me, do you actually know her? And I went, I'm saying nothing. So it was a good feeling.
Did you have something you wanted to say about the Olympic torch?
So was the Olympic torch not just really big then, but was it really big when you actually hold the torch in the Special Olympics up to now?
I mean,
when I was in the Special Olympics back in 2010.
You took it round Northern Ireland, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I have a friend who has Down syndrome, and his name is Walsh, and he had the chance of holding the torch, right? And we were so excited about him coming with the torch on the spawner with a fire with the torch. And then I'm thinking to myself, that's an amazing experience. Mm-hmm. But was that experience feel different to you when you hold the torch?
Absolutely. Anything associated with the Olympics excites me because it's about bringing the youth of the world together in peace and harmony. And I think, you know, it builds bridges between countries and peoples, and it makes special friends because you're rooting for the same reward.
And both that feeling, Meg, was it nice?
Oh, absolutely. I just feel so proud of it. And we have one in our office that we got at the London Olympics. And that photograph there is when the young athletes that we had chosen handed the torch to them to go and light the
big one,
the big rostrum.
Yeah.
And upstairs I have one of the flower buds that was in the flame, mm-hmm, because of being in that photograph.
Right.
And we were welded together, James, like this, with pride. It was just amazing to be representing our country, because usually they have one person to light the Olympic torch, and they chose, I think there were 8 of us, yeah, who were all gold medalists,
yeah,
to do that, but to also to pass it on to the next generation, which was lovely.
I'm sure that was a lovely feeling,
yes,
not just moving on to the next generation on, but if we actually move that on to other people, They'll be so excited, not just lifting that torch, yeah, but also just to make fun, yes, you know, really.
But you know that they took the torch around the world, and it came through Belfast, the streets of Belfast, and I ran for a distance with it, and I was so happy to be honoured to carry, yeah, it, you know.
Well, I mean, if you're not entitled to carry it, who is, you know?
But there were so many people had that opportunity who had given some in any way to sport, like washing shirts for the rugby team or the football, yeah, team, and people who hadn't actually participated in the sport themselves but had made it happen for others.
I know that my short movie has won an Oscar, and that feeling was really good. But what was that feeling, Meg, for you to win the gold medal?
Well, it had taken me a long time, a lot longer it took you to get your Oscar. So I had been competing since I was 16, I was 33. So it was really the ultimate in my eyes of achievement in sport. But then, of course, Malcolm asked me about building a track, and I spent 3 years doing that. But I also went to the next Commonwealth Games, and I wasn't fit because my coach had been killed in a car accident, mm-hmm, and I had been devastated by that because he had given me so much help. So I really wanted to go to the next Commonwealth Games to raise the profile of the track to get more money to build it.
And how many times was there from then up to now? Was it huge, or was it just, it's a worldwide Games for everyone?
Oh, for the Olympics, you know, there are now over 200 countries take part in the Olympics.
Wow.
So it's harder than it was in my day. I think there was only about 169 then. So every country wants to be a winner, wants to have at least one gold, yeah, medal.
you say it's harder now than it was then, but surely the cream rises to the top, and it wouldn't matter if you had 2,000 countries, the people who are the best of a generation will come through.
They will. That's true.
You know.
And you have to have a bit of luck on the day. Like if we were talking about Rhys yesterday.
Yes.
If Rhys caught his toe on the pummel, finish. He could be 10th instead of 1st.
Yeah. Fine margin. Yes. Again, isn't it? You know. One of the first personalities who I ever came across, not from Northern Ireland, was somebody who gets a name check in your book. And I got on the Underground in London, and she was sitting opposite me. I remember it like it was yesterday. She was wearing a purple linen suit and tan sandals, Mary Rand.
She was lovely.
Right, you know, yes. I mean, for me, it was like, you know, she was to athletics what Dusty Springfield was to pop music.
Absolutely, you know? She was beautiful, and she was the golden girl of that era. And then the Tokyo Olympics, she won a gold, silver and a bronze.
Yeah.
And, you know, I shared a room with her and Ann Packer, who also got the gold and the silver. I was 4th. And they hammered a nail into the bedroom wall so they'd have somewhere to hang their medal. I didn't, because I didn't think I was going to win one.
No. Well, it's amazing you mention those names, because I feel that some of the athletes from your era and just before then are forever names that will be remembered by the public.
Right.
You know, the public will never forget Mary Rand or Mary Peters any more than they'll never forget Henry Cooper. And, you know,
that's right.
It's just an amazing thing. People these days seem to think, because of all the new media and the overload of information, that suddenly sports stars have become personalities. They've always been. You know, well, in my lifetime anyway, you know.
When you think about Mary Earp being in the list of shortlisted for the sports personality, a goalkeeper.
Oh, no.
And yet she has made such an impression on the next generation of young soccer players.
Well, maybe you know, and I'm not going to ask you, but if I ever had a spare tenner, I put it on her to win Sports Personality this year. I think she was outstanding. In an outstanding year.
Absolutely.
You know, there were a lot of real, genuine contenders. But as you say, a goalkeeper? Come on. You know, it's fantastic.
It's amazing. You know? And it will raise the level of soccer. Mm-hmm. In the whole of the UK.
Well, until I read the line in your book about Mary Rand, the thing that surprised me most this week, last Sunday, Women's Super League, Arsenal were playing Chelsea, and before the game, they had sold 55,000 tickets. Now,
used to be two men and a dog.
The dog left. Generally, the dog left at half time. But it has really exploded.
It's exciting.
It is exciting, you know. And when we were over at the BAFTAs.
I know that this is going to happen.
We met Alex Scott.
Oh, she's lovely.
What a lovely girl. Yes, yes. And I said to her, look, I'm
so... Listen here, make me jealous.
He's named Quabbin.
That's what he's doing. But I said to her, look, I just had to come over and say hello because I'm actually reading your book at the minute. Oh, she said. Well, two things. Thank you for buying it, number one. And two, what do you think? I said, you didn't have to be as honest as you were, but I applaud you for being so. It's a riveting read.
Good.
And she said, I was going to sanitize it a bit. And she said, then I thought, you know what? I'm either writing a book or I'm not.
Yeah.
And she did it. I think she's a great girl.
I do think.
Why are you here? She said. I said, oh, my son's nominated for a BAFTA. She said.
As he do. Well,
good luck with that. She said, I'll be watching out for him. Hopefully
didn't
win something.
They were all going to sing happy birthday.
Was we crying here when not down the phone? No. Like, when I meet all these nice fellas over in America, people with any disabilities, but the All Stars group, one group, is one on your track. What can I give out from your advice to them so they could follow their dreams, or do you have a different advice to them?
I always say, if you want to be in sport, enjoy it. Mm-hmm. If you don't enjoy it, it's not worth doing. But look at the friendships that you made through your tag rugby and your sport, and you wouldn't have made those if you hadn't been doing it. You can do it through music or acting or other fields. But sport brings people together, and you never forget the people you played with when you were young.
Yeah, because I remember talking to a person called Kirsty, Neil, and she is in that group as well, and she was telling me that lovely feeling that she has, or had, wanting on that track was just amazing fun, but they're very competitive when it comes to any sport, basically.
It's about friendship, travel, and opportunity, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting, name drop alert. I was talking to Donna the other day on the phone, and I told her that...
Oh, God, he drops every name.
I was coming up to see you, and she said, you know, for James, she said, it's like me coming home from winning Eurovision, or Mary coming home with her gold medal from the Olympics. To win an Oscar
mind-boggling.
It's in that profession, it's the equivalent.
Yes,
you know,
it's
amazing.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
You know, it's not the only award the film won.
No.
It won, you know, the BAFTA, the IFTA, the this, the that, the. But in the cold light of day, the one that people will remember is the Oscar.
They will.
And
yeah.
It doesn't matter how many other gold medals you won. The Olympic one is it.
That's right.
You know? And, you know, Dana...
And unless you're a cheat, they'll never take it away from you.
No. That's right. And actually, on that subject, we found out about what happens to the Oscar.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So, basically, when you own an Oscar, and if you, pardon my French of signers, pass away, we have to give it back.
Oh, wow.
Because if I
leave it over to my dad, or likes of you, or anybody, because of the Academy, have to say, well, we have to put it out in the display in our museum in the Derby Theatre, and apparently it's a real. So if you're a gold medal, was that the same both as I've learned, or was it a Devon thing?
No, we keep ours,
yeah,
and mine's in the museum so that young people can see it and enjoy it. And I'm willing it to the museum, but I hope it'll be to a sports museum that'll be blown out before I die. But you do have to give back your awards that you're given by the Royal Family.
Oh, right.
Yes,
oh, right,
you
right.
do have to give those. And I have a banner hanging at St. George's Chapel under my over my stall.
Yes.
Which Gladstone sat in.
Right.
And when the day I die, the banner will be taken down and folded and put aside until the eldest son, eldest male can go and collect it at a church service.
Right.
Oh, lovely.
And, you know, Prince Philip's was taken down the day he passed away. They have to get scaffolding up to take it down.
Yeah, amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, all those royal awards that you've got, just off the top of your head, can you remember them all?
There aren't that many. There's an MBE, a CBE, a Dame Companion of Honour, and Lady of the Garter.
That was the one, Lady of the Garter. It's the big deal, isn't it?
There's only 24 of us.
Yeah.
And personally given by the Sovereign.
Yes. It's wow factor time, that.
Well, you can imagine getting that phone call.
Yeah.
And pinching myself and shaking with shock. And surprise, and that's the picture that they give you to commemorate, or the certificate.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I can just see my late mother looking down now, and no offence to King Charles at all. But my mother would just say, oh, well, it wouldn't be the same as getting it from the Queen.
Nah,
they didn't even need to give her a name.
No.
The Queen.
Yes.
You know.
She was special.
And
but King Charles is doing a good job, and he will, I hope he gives it to you.
I'm sure that those thoughts are fantastic, but as your point of view, but not just all these pictures, was it amazing just to have those memories?
I pinch myself, James. Like, you must pinch yourself when you know you've got an Oscar. These things don't come to people like us,
yeah,
normal people. I just feel so proud to know you. And to be a friend.
Well, I have to say, I surprised as I was to be invited, albeit as James's plus one, to Buckingham Palace for the Coronation Garden Party.
Uh-huh.
So we're people watching, right? All of it. And I hear this voice saying, Ivan. It can't be me, who knows me, yeah, right? And I look round, and there is the beaming face of Mary P. And I thought, and I'm looking at this, and we're sort of awkwardly making our way about, and you're totally at home. You know exactly what to do, where to go, probably the best places to go for the best canapes or whatever.
Well, I've had such lovely opportunities, and I take them, because if you don't take them, you never have that opportunity again.
That's right, yeah.
I know that I've won so many of awards, but see, when you go to any fancy dinners, when you have to dress up really nice for, not just presenting it out to other people, but did I have to think who would give out the next one? In your case, not just people with disabilities, but if we take any sports, gymnastics, or maybe football, or when you go to all the fancy dinners, do you find, when you think what the winner is, do you take a moment, or do you say?
I savour every opportunity. I just feel so proud that I can do things and feel comfortable going to places.
Well, as our old friend, we started with him, so we may as well finish with him. He said, it's lovely to be here. He said, in fact, at this stage, it's lovely to be anywhere.
It's true.
You know?
But it's lovely to be in both of your company. Thank you so much.
No, thank you for A, agreeing to talk to us, and for B, for making it so easy, as you always do. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. My pal.